This is the lecture for August 1997. The title is Zephaniah and Modern Times. This prophecy is a companion to that of Habakkuk. Last month, I discussed that prophecy in detail. And this month, we're going to talk about a companion prophet who lived at the exact same time in Judea by the name of Zephaniah, which we have in front of us at the present time. These two prophets, Habakkuk and Zephaniah, lived in the time of the Neo-Babylonian Empire, or shall I say at the very beginning of it, at the end of the Assyrian period and the beginning of the Neo-Babylonian Empire. In actual fact, the Assyrians were still in power when they gave their prophecies. Nineveh was destroyed in 612 B.C. upon the normal chronological stem that historians give to us today, around 612 B.C. Now, that period of time is going to have to be adjusted a little bit, about 30 years. I'm writing a book on chronology at the present time, and we will find that some of those dates are not exactly accurate. But they're close enough for us to begin to understand, in fact, we can understand the basic teachings of the prophecies, even though they may not be particularly right on schedule as far as the time periods are concerned. But 30 years is not bad. And Zephaniah and Habakkuk certainly prophesied at the same time, at the end of the Assyrian period and at the very beginning of the Neo-Babylonian Empire, which was championed by and led by Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon. Now, Nebuchadnezzar is mentioned quite frequently in the last part of 2 Kings. He was the one with his armies that destroyed the city of Jerusalem in what we say is about the year 586 B.C. on our common chronology. The city of Jerusalem was not only destroyed, but also the temple of Solomon. It went up in smoke on the 9th and 10th of Ab, about our month, August. And remarkably so, some 600 years later almost, we find that the temple that Herod built, the one that was here when Christ was on earth and the apostles, it also was destroyed by the Romans, remarkably, on the exact day of the year, the exact time. And we find a book of the Bible, the book of Lamentations, written by Jeremiah, who was a contemporary of these two prophets, by the way, Zephaniah and Habakkuk. And he wrote the book of Lamentations, which was a prophecy about the destruction of the temple that took place on the 9th and 10th of Ab, the fifth month of the Hebrew calendar. And he designed that that book be read, the book of Lamentations, as an anniversary for that destruction. So we have Zephaniah here, along with Habakkuk, speaking about the time of this Nebuchadnezzar. He was the one who destroyed, like I say, Jerusalem and took into captivity the people of Judea into Babylon, where they stayed for some 70 years before they were able to come back under Cyrus the Persian and rebuild the city of Jerusalem and the temple once more. So we get the time period here in which these prophets were prophesying. The first seven prophets of the 12 minor prophets were prophesying in the Assyrian period. These two prophets, Habakkuk and Zephaniah, in the Neo-Babylonian period, the period of the Chaldeans. And the last three prophets, which we've already discussed, were given Haggai, Zechariah, and Malachi in the post-Babylonian period, after the Babylonian captivity happened to have passed. So we find that these 12 minor prophets then are positioned in order on a single scroll in a chronological fashion. And here we are now with prophecy number 8, that's Habakkuk, and the present one, 9, number 9, Zephaniah, in the Babylonian period. So now that we know that, then we can begin to comprehend some of the prophetic teachings from a geographical point of view and from a historical point of view. Because when we get the time period in mind, then we're able to see the theme of the prophecy itself and get some of the characters that are on the prophetic stage. For example, the people of Judah, we know the time that they are being discussed. And the individuals that are going to cause punishment and chastisement upon them at that time, we know who they were and are, or were, I should say, in this case, because they would have been the Babylonians or the Chaldeans, or they came from the area of Cush, between the two rivers, the River Tigris and the River Euphrates. And though they were not Cushites by race entirely by this time in history, nevertheless, they came from the area that was first settled by Cush. And the first individual who was the king back there in the time right after Noah was Nimrod. And that's how the name Cush got onto that region of the earth in the Mesopotamian area. And it was known as the area of Cush. But the people of Cush moved out of that region, and many of them went through Arabia south, and then some went on the other side of the Persian Gulf, and they went east. The southern ones went into Africa and became the Ethiopians, a dark-skinned people. The others went to the east and became the Hindu Kush, a dark-skinned people, but differently, different racial characteristics than the people of Africa. But they were known even in early times as the two Kushes, the two Kushites. Now, the Greeks call them Ethiopians, and the word Ethiopia doesn't even sound like Kush at all, as we know. But the two are identical in actual fact. The word Ethiopia just means black-skinned, and so you see what it means is that the Cushites were named Ethiopians by the Greeks because of the color of the skin, whereas in the Bible the Cushites are named Cushites because of who they came from, who was Cush, the son of Noah, and from Ham. And that's how we get the two terms identical to each other, but they don't sound like each other. Now, in actual fact, in this book of Zephaniah here, in chapter 2 and verse 12, where it speaks about the Ethiopians, it doesn't mean the Ethiopians in Africa at all, and we've got to take that into consideration. It means the Cushites. And in this particular case here, it means the Cushites of Mesopotamia. Now, if you don't know your history, if you don't know how to determine these and differentiate what the prophecies are talking about relative to the geography of the 6th century BC, then you're going to be led astray tremendously. You've got to be very, very careful on this. That's why you cannot, and I cannot, understand prophecy unless we comprehend the contemporary periods in which the prophets were prophesying, and also the geographical and the ethnic terms that they were using to identify the individuals on the prophetic stage. If you do not take those things into consideration, you're going to be led astray. The word Ethiopian here in chapter 2 and verse 12, as I will show you a little bit later on in the prophecy, does not refer either to the Ethiopians in Africa or to the Ethiopians in India, that is, the Cushites. It's talking about where the Cushites had their origin. It means the land of Mesopotamia. And even in the cuneiform tablets that we have, written by people who lived in that area, they even called themselves in ancient times the Kassites. Kassites after Cush, after these Cushites. So we have clear evidence of what is intended here by the prophecies of Habakkuk, which spoke about the Cushites, or Cushan, and about Zephaniah, which the King James translators say means Ethiopia, when in actual fact it means Cush, it means the people of Mesopotamia. It means the Chaldean peoples. It means the people coming from the Mesopotamian areas. And that is what the prophecy really is all about. And when was the prophecy given? At the very time that the Neo-Babylonian Empire was having its commencement. It was at the end of the Assyrian period, and the Babylonians now were becoming the transcendent power. In other words, the supreme power in the land. A little later on, we find that Jeremiah and Ezekiel spoke about these Babylonians and the powerful armies that they had under Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon. And we have the prophecies of Daniel, remember, too, which have to do with Nebuchadnezzar in a very personal way, and how that the whole kingdoms of the world, no matter where people would be in the world from then on, would be known as, quote-unquote, Babylon, inheriting the Babylonian system of government. And when you come to the book of Revelation, written some 600-700 years later, we find that the whole system that's going to exist at the end time, which we are fast approaching at the present, is known as the Babylonian system of government. And we find it in the book of Daniel. And that is what Zephaniah is talking about here. He's talking about the beginning of that government of Nebuchadnezzar, though it was written just before his time. Yet the people involved here are the Kassites, or the Chaldeans, or the people from Mesopotamia, with the capital city at Babylon. And they were the ones who came on the scene a few years later that took Judah captive. The people destroyed the city of Jerusalem and also the temple, and it remained in the desolate state for around 70 years until the time of the Babylonian captivity was over. So we have these prophecies then given at this crucial period in history. But as we will find out, and as the title of this lecture states, we are finding here prophecies that have a contemporary relevance geographically and historically speaking to the period of the 6th century B.C. at the upper part of it. But in actual fact, the relevance chronologically speaking from a prophetic point of view has to do with the very end of the age, the end time, the time that is depicted in the book of Revelation. You know, the one thing about John, who was the revelator, in actual fact, it was Jesus Christ who was the revelator. He gave the information to John, the apostle, who wrote the book of Revelation on a scroll. So it is coming from Christ himself. But the book of Revelation garners from all areas of the Bible, both from Isaiah, from Ezekiel, from the minor prophets that we're talking about here, from the Psalms, and even from Moses' writing some. He garners together all types of information about various nations, puts them into a chronological scheme of things mentioned in the book of Revelation, puts them into seven seals or seven trumpets and seven woes or seven plagues, and puts them into a type of a chronological scheme so that you can understand what's going to happen at the end of the age. And some of these prophecies here in Zephaniah, in fact, all of it, refers to this period of time mentioned in the book of Revelation. And by the way, what Revelation says is just a reflection of what the book of Daniel also states about a period of time in the future known as 7 years, in which in the middle of that 7 years, 3.5 years on one side and 3.5 years on the other, certain events will take place. They are mentioned both in the book of Revelation and also in the book of Daniel. Now, what you have to do once you get Daniel and the book of Revelation firmly in mind from a chronological point of view, then you can hook on to that chronological skeleton, shall we say, or that body that without flesh on it. It's all cooked together, but then you can put on it certain flesh, flesh coming from the New Testament teachings by the Apostle Paul, flesh coming from the Old Testament teachings, of which Zephaniah we're talking about here and the previous prophet Habakkuk were talking about dealing with events associated with the end time. Now remember in Habakkuk, it was a prophecy about the Chaldeans rising up and actually conquering the entire world. And it puts the prophecy of the conquering, or the one who does the conquering, as being an individual person, a singular individual, who will lead the Chaldean armies. Now it's going to be the Chaldeans, plural, who do the job, but they are going to be led by a single individual. And you know the Apostle Paul speaks about a man of sin to come in the future. He calls him also the son of perdition. He also calls him the wicked one. In the book of Revelation, we find him called the beast. The book of John calls him the Antichrist. We have a singular individual that is going to come up who is going to be a false Christ. And in many ways, he's going to lead even Gentile forces, believe it or not, as well as Israelite forces. And they are going to do certain things at the end of the age, and that's what these prophecies here are about. In actual fact, Zephaniah and modern times is an apt description of what this prophecy is about. It's for the future. It's for the period called the Day of the Lord. And if you want to know when the Day of the Lord actually commences, why, it's easily detected in the Scripture. If you go to the book of Revelation, you will find at the end of chapter 6 of the book of Revelation, it says, from there on, starting with chapter 7 and the opening of the seven of them, and all the way to the seven last plagues, you will find that period of time divided into two halves, 3.5 years on one side and 3.5 years on the other, making a period of seven years, is known as the Day of the Lord or the Day of the Lord's Wrath. You check the last verse of chapter 6 of the book of Revelation. Chapter 7 then commences the Day of the Lord. You know what Zephaniah is about? It's about the Day of the Lord. It's about that period of time. Now, the previous book, the book of Habakkuk, says that certain peace and security is going to come to the people of God in the middle of that appointed time period. Now, we are to look for that. It's going to look like it's going to be delayed, but at the same time, it will not be delayed, God said. So, we now get into the book of Zephaniah, who is a companion prophet to Habakkuk. What you should do is to listen to the former tape that I gave on Habakkuk, and we can then put the two together, and you can begin then to comprehend what was going on in the minds of these prophets, written at the end of the 7th century B.C. and the beginning of the 6th century B.C., when we get the proper time schedule of it. But it's in the Neo-Babylonian period, and the chief king at the time, to come up in just a few years after these prophecies were written, would have been Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon. And the people who were the most powerful at the time would be the Chaldeans, sometimes called the people of Cush, because they lived in the Cushite area called Mesopotamia, with Babylon as their capital. And the Babylonians would have been another synonym for these people. All right, here we then come to the prophecy itself. And as you can see by reading through, it is 3 chapters long, and it's a companion to the book of Habakkuk. It says, the word of the Lord which came to Zephaniah, and it names who he is here, and when he actually prophesied. It was in the days of Josiah, King Josiah, who was king of Judah. Josiah, by the way, was a righteous king. He died at 39 years of age when he went to fight against the Babylonians on behalf of the Egyptians, when God told him not to do so, and he was actually killed at the Battle of Megiddo, or shall we say, in the New Testament terms, Armageddon. So here is a prophecy written in the time of this king who was killed as a representative for Israel or Judah at Armageddon. And actually, the prophecies of Armageddon mentioned in the book of Revelation fit into this scheme that we're seeing here if we have eyes to see and ears to hear. Going on, here is what God says. He says, I will utterly, this is chapter 1 and verse 2, I will utterly consume all things off the land, saith the Lord. Now this, if you look at this, the word land is eretz in Hebrew. It can mean the earth, the entire earth, or it can mean the land, a particular land under discussion. In the context here, it's the land of Judah that is being discussed. And he's going to put a consummation upon that land. And it's going to be in the superlative sense. I will utterly consume all things from off the land, saith Yahweh. Now, when is this period of time in which he is going to do this? It is in the day of the Lord. Now, the day of the Lord was not back there in the 6th century B.C. The day of the Lord was not at the time the Romans captured Jerusalem and destroyed the temple some 2,000 years ago. The day of the Lord is just on the horizon to us. It's right out yonder, not very far away. We're on the threshold just waiting for that day of the Lord. It's not going to be long. Now, it's not going to occur tomorrow. It's not going to occur in another 10 years, I am convinced. But it's not very far away. In actual fact, we're getting prepared for that already. And as we get closer to that day, that time where the day of the Lord will be introduced, and the period just prior to it, these prophecies are going to be made known much more clearly than they are even now. And now, they're pretty clear now. But as far as understanding them and comprehending them in a detailed manner, the closer we get to the events, the more this is going to be understandable to us. That is the way that God does things. But we can begin to see from these prophecies here what is going to happen in the period just prior to and during the day of the Lord. And the day of the Lord is a seven-year period, mentioned in the book of Daniel and in the book of Revelation. I will, verse 2, utterly consume all things off the land, saith Yahweh. I will consume man and beast. I will consume the fowls of heaven, the fishes of the sea, and the stumbling blocks with the wicked. And I will cut off man from off the land, saith the Lord. Now that's pretty severe. That's a period of time coming up here in the future. Stretch out mine hand upon Judah and upon all the inhabitants of Jerusalem. Now why is he coming against Judah and Jerusalem? This has an end-time relevance to it, but let's look at it very carefully here. He's using events that were contemporary to his own time, And these events did take place back there. There's no question that they did. But they have an end time relevance. And we're going to have to be able to judge what he means by that as we get closer to the time. But here is why he's going to cut off Judah and the inhabitants of Jerusalem. He says, I will cut off the remnants of Baal from this place. In other words, false gods. And the name of the Kemarim with the priest, Kemarim. Now, that's what it says right here. Who are the Kemarim in the plural? The word Kemar means dark-clothed people. Dark-clothed. Now, if you will check in the commentaries, they well know what this means. And the Jews have long known what it means. It's a proper name for a group of people. A group of people who will go around in black garb. In actual fact, most of the priests, lots of the priests, particularly of the Babylonians, wore black garments. I have here a quote from the Cyclopedia of Biblical and Theological and Ecclesiastical Literature, Volume 2, page 229. The Kemarim, quote, the priests who officiated in the service of the golden calves at Dan and at Bethel were called Kemarim in the Bible, black robe priests. Now, this was in Israel, northern Israel. Even to this day, I'm still quoting, even to this day, the Jews retain the word, and they apply it in derision, now listen to this, to Christian ministers on account of their black robes that they wear, unquote. And you know, I'm a Christian minister, and I have been for over 40 years. And in the early days of my ministry, you know what I would normally wear when I would get up on at a service to preach? It would normally be a black suit. And why did I wear a black suit? Because it was custom to do so. But where do we get black suits in the Protestant environment? Well, we got it from the black robes that came from our Roman Catholic traditions or from our Greek Orthodox traditions. And you know, it's absolutely true that most of the priests today dress in black. And we have taken on that custom. Very seldom do I wear a black suit anymore. I can if I want to. But the point is, a black suit at a religious service? Why, it's just carrying on with the old Kemarims is exactly what it is. And you know what it says in the Bible that God's priests ought to wear in the temple at Jerusalem? White garments. That's what it says. And here were these people taking over the black customs of the pagans. And they were doing it in ancient Israel. They were doing it Dan and Bethel up in northern Israel. And here is God, through the prophet Zephaniah, saying, I'm getting tired of these people going after the traditions of Baal and dressing like priests of Baal. And that's what he says, dressing in black garments. And you see, they were carrying on with pagan idolatrous customs. Now, of course, we don't have that in the United States of America in our Protestant and Catholic traditions, do we, at all? And in Europe? No, of course we don't have. We just have it just pure as we can possibly get. Listen, we have about as much paganism in our traditions today as the ancient Jews did in theirs. Now, this has a relevance back at that time, but it also has to do with the day of the Lord coming up in the future. He goes on to say that he's upset. God is. Why is he bringing judgment upon Judah and Jerusalem? It's not only because of the Kemarims and the remnants of Baal that are there, but he says, and them that worship the host of heaven, that is the heavens, you see, the stars, upon the housetops, them that worship and swear by Lord, by the name of God. And they also swear by Malcolm. Malcolm is actually the name of an angel, a very powerful, it means messenger. It was a god of the Ammonites, and they were swearing by him as well. And they that are turned back from the Lord, away from the Lord, and those who have not sought the Lord, nor inquired of him, those are the ones God says he is against. Hold your peace at the presence of the Lord God. Now that's what he tells them. He said, I want you to stand right still, and don't you say a word. This is what God says. For the day of the Lord is at hand. Now, if the day of the Lord is at hand, what is God going to do? Here's what he says. For, Zephaniah says, speaking in the name of the Lord, for the Lord has prepared a sacrifice, and he has bed for his guests to come. Now, you know, a sacrifice is something beautiful in ancient times. what you would do when you would bring a sacrifice to the Lord in the temple, the great ceremony associated with it. You'd have the sacrifice depending on what time it was. Now, if it was a sin or a trespass offering, you did not do this. But if it was a burnt offering, or shall we say a peace offering, why, you had part of the meal if you were an Israelite. God had part of the meal, and part was given to the priest, and you'd have a good time with the sacrifice. Now, you want a sacrifice? Come to have a meal with God? That sounds all right, doesn't it? It is. And he has invited his guests. He's going to have a sacrifice. He's going to have a nice meal with all these people. But when you read the rest of it, you're going to find out what type of sacrifice he's going to have. And the sacrifice is not exactly what you thought might occur in the temple at Jerusalem. Because he had just said here, the people of Jerusalem and Judah are going after Baal. They're dressing in black garments. Now, of course, you don't see Jewish rabbis in black garments today, do you? Or do you? What do they dress in all the time? Black garments. You don't see them in white garments. You see them in black garments. Now, you say, oh, that's just a minor point, Ernest. Well, it may be a minor point to me and you, and I agree with you. It's not to God. He says, I don't want these people dressing like Kimarims in black garments. They're deceiving people. And that is what he says is the case. And they're going on, he says, they're turning from the Lord. They call his name, they use him, but they're turning from him. So I'm going to prepare a sacrifice, he says. And I've bidden the guests to come. Verse 8, and it shall come to pass in the day of the Lord's, day of the Lord's sacrifice, here it comes, I will punish the princes, the king's children, and all such that are clothed with strange apparel, foreign apparel, in black garbs, not dressing the way God says. You know, he is very interested in outward appearance. God is. The way an individual looks. A person who has appearance, you know, that looks like a heathen, going to act like a heathen as far as God is concerned. And you know, he says, I am going to invite them to a sacrifice. But it's going to be the day of the Lord. And this sacrifice is going to be against the princes of Israel. It's going to be against the others. And we are going to see a sacrifice. Turn over the cassette tape at this juncture for the B side of this lecture.